करना है। ईतान सिंह करतान सिंह यतान सिंह आहे न सिंह हे रहे न सिंह na treng hana den tarana papada namaste na treng aya halara jana he Hiranyo Kashipo Bhaktaha Tilatam Kana Kana He Itana Tringa Bharatana Tringa Yata yata yanita tana tingo Ahena tingo hera hena tringo Nasinghana din karanan papada Kava Kava Kamalabhena Kam Abhuta Singha Dari Tari Ranya Kakipo Dana Singha E Sabarita Nahari Rapha Jai Jagadisha Hare Tata Gaudita Hare Jai Jagadita Hare Dabare Nakam Abhuta Singha Dari Tari Ranya Kachito Dana Bhinga हे सबदीता नहरे रूपा जय जगदीश हरे जय जगदीश हरे जय जगदीश हरे काय नत्रिंगादे तायो नत्रिंगादे Jaya Nasringadev, 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 Tayo Nasringadev. Jaya Palad Maharaj, Palad Maharaj, Jaya Palad Maharaj. Jaya Radha Damodara, Radha Damodara, Jaya Radhe. Jaya Radha Damodara, Radha Damodara, Radhe. Jaya Radha Kalachandi, Prasad Akalakandi Jayarate. Jaya Radha Kalatanji, Radha Kalatanji, Jaya Radhe. Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Baladeva, Jaya Subhadra. Anitai go Siva, Hariba, Hariba, Anitai go Hariba. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada. Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Vishnu, Pahar Muhammad Barakachar, Purusi Simati Divine Grace, Iskan Founder Chad, AC Bhaktivedanta Swami Sirbhu Vadki. Jaya Vishnu, Pahar Muhammad Barakachar, Purusi Simati Divine Grace. The Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Pukha Maharaj ki Sira Namachad Haridasa Kaur ki Vrem Sekho Si Krishna Chaitanya Vabunita Nanda Sisa Dvaita Garhasi Vasari Go Bhakta Vindiki Si Si Radha Krishna Saima Sundarada Kundagiri Govadana ki Vrindavan Dham ki Matoya Dham ki Navadeep Dham ki Jamuna Mai ki Ganga Mai ki Tulasi Devi ki Bhakti Devi ki, Samaved Bhaktivinda ki, all glories to the Samir devotees, all glories to the Samir devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. So I want to, of course, thank the Sringa Tirtha and Nandavir for trying to get me here on time. We had an 8-hour drive. But we know there are no accidents. It's not easy sometimes even for devotees to accept that there are no accidents. Because so many things happen daily that's out of our control. It makes us wonder then, where is free will? Free will is very huge, grand, but in one sense it's minute, because we choose either to accept Krishna or to deny him. It's hard sometimes to constantly accept Krishna when we find that things happen that are not in our control, or when things happen that we feel shouldn't happen, or shouldn't happen the way they happen, or when they happen. Krishna Loka's situation was quite auspicious in that before he came here, he was already ill, not knowing how ill he was. Radha Damodara arranged for him to come to be able to get their association, to directly have service of the deities, and to directly be able to live in the confines of the temple, which wouldn't have been the same if he had stayed in Africa. Sickness would still been there, it was already there. Death would have still been there, it was already arranged. Matter of fact, when I left, I spoke with one or two of devotees, and I was thinking, maybe we're not considering how close the death will be. When I saw him up in his room, and I said, when we see the doctor, things will be a lot clearer. And so that could have been taken in two different ways, that the doctor will give, this recent last doctor in Hershey will give information of how to stop the disease or check the disease. Or it could have been the information will come that will
bring clarity on what can be done or what cannot be done. Disease is embraced as a part of life, and it can never be totally checked. It doesn't matter what kind of modality one turns to or takes advantage of. Is that disease can never be checked. First, we understand that the body itself is a disease, and that the material world itself is a disease state. And so, given that we are integral part of a disease, unhealthy condition, we can only monitor it, slow it down, while sometimes people forget. Most people who are materialists forget that they're in a disease condition and that they will die. Sure thing about taking birth is that, of course, there's death. Although we also understand the Twebaham, the To Nasam, the Chamnabi, the Naranipaha, the Chaiva Naba Bishamaha, Sabayata Ataparam, that yes, there never was a time Arjuna was being informed that you did not exist or all of these kings. But we see that the kings died and Arjuna also died. And so many people on the battlefield died at different times. Now, death in most of material society is like an anathema. It's considered something that is bad, should not be thought about so much, should be put off as long as possible. But even if someone lives for a so-called long time, it's still very short. When you saw the body being taken away for the last time that you will see it, how many of you thought or were thinking, who will be next? Or how many of you were thinking, how will you leave the body? When Srila Prabhupada was very ill and he was wrapping up his pastimes, and of course the devotees were very sad and were frightened and bewildered in many cases, and Brahmananda approached Srila Prabhupada and he was very sad and bewildered, as much or more than most. And Prabhupada explained to him, in his weak condition, in summary, that you think this will not happen to you. That sometimes we are sad about someone else's misfortune that we might consider. But one, do we realize that is everyone's ultimate condition is that we will leave. And that it will happen to us in a particular way, according to our also karma. There is some play within the karma, but it will happen to each of us. We had all these samskaras, and we say, well, we seem to give a lot of attention to birth. We look at Prabhupada's pastimes. We don't see a whole lot of attention he gave to death. It's not true. He gave attention every single day to death. Because every message, every lecture he gave, he explained that we're not these bodies and that we have to prepare ourselves for transcending. We don't hear, because most of you didn't know Prabhupada, but you don't hear stories in the biography or stories about Prabhupada getting very much involved in the passing ceremonies of his disciples. Some passed, even some babies passed. Was he not concerned? He was surely extremely concerned. But he also was very clear that he had given us what was necessary, and that he did not physically have to be there to facilitate the final transition. If he had to physically be there, then it means your whole philosophy is a farce because it's only based on geographical and physical arrangements. Then all the stories we read about the great personalities shouldn't mean anything because it was of another time, another era. And if we're not only in the temple, then it would suggest that Krishna consciousness only has a certain value when we're directly in front of the deities or directly chanting the holy names. Yes, those are times that we beautifully reinforce ourselves to carry that with us every day. So in many ways, it was beautiful that you had to work this out and be there for yourselves, with yourselves, to really realize a little more that community means that you have to be accountable and responsible and helpful for each other. We're not a cult. We're only thinking about the leader, or we're not Kanishta Adhikars, where we're only thinking about the deity, that we have to think about seeing Krishna in everyone's heart and seeing each opportunity as a chance to serve Krishna. We had many, many obstacles that could have stopped us from coming totally, but there was some involvement in how we got here, and of course it was very dangerous. The speed we were driving in the rain could have had another death, but we have to be careful, take risks, but the Krishna factor is also there. Yesterday I was even more eager to come, because as he left, at first it seemed difficult in trying to contact with him. Sometimes when someone leaves the body, they either are not aware that they've left, or sometimes they're very attached to trying to stay, and so there's a lot of bewilderment. But especially devotees, even non-devotees, the soul is met by helpers according to the quality of the person, devotee or non-devotee. Who know, of course, if one is very sinful, then of course the Yamadutas, who are also helpers, they will meet the particular entity. And so for devotees, there is so much arrangements that are already prepared even before the person, you know, leaves. So in his case, as well as any devotee's case, that even before they leave, so many arrangements have already been made. Sometimes, like in his case, there was some lingering because he was not quite ready to leave. But intervention took place. Many times a person spends months and months and months just more and more intense suffering, especially with cancer. And it can go on and on for quite some time. But Krishna arranged that he was able to leave in the environment of the temple after having association of several of you, being able to chant and to be there for him, especially these last days. So will you and will all of us, how auspicious will our leaving be? How much will we be ready when it's time to go? Who will be in the environment when we leave? Where will our faith be when we leave? Where was his faith? Where was your faith when you was seeing him leaving? Many times people enter into religious communities, churches, other institutions, mainly based on trying to involve themselves in spiritual association to help with a disease. And so often one feels, or is thinking somehow, bewildering, even though we see that as surely as one is born, one dies. But often people think, well, if I take shelter of spiritual environment, I see Radha Damodara Jiki, that if I take shelter of a spiritual environment, then I shouldn't get sick. And I shouldn't die. I don't know one spiritualist who has not died in terms of history. Of course, there are certain Nietzsche sitters who come and they go back in very unusual ways, but we see even in the Leelas that there's death at some point. There's a category, I think, Mitra Sanjivana, certain entities who never die. That is a rare, very rare category. Still remain on the planet. Yuga after yuga. That is rare. But what we see is that there is sickness and there is death. Raghunath Das, many of the Goswamis were very ill. Remember Sanatana Goswami having all the sores? He was very ill. Physically, the sores oozing from his body. Prabhupada had a very serious case of sugar diabetes and some other types of urinary problems and some other issues for so much of his life. In terms of our knowing of him, when he came to the West, he was already quite ill. So first we have to put out of our mind that if someone becomes ill, it's a sign that they're not spiritual, or it's a sign that the environment is not spiritual, or it's a sign that Krishna is not merciful. Part of my being away for these next few days and New Jersey and Washington is just seeing different doctors for different ailments, along with some other preaching activities. But it's an integral part of my schedule to look at why a root canal went wrong, see a dentist, see tomorrow. Yesterday I was seeing acupuncturists to find out why the tumors are getting bigger. The next few days I see someone, you know, about the prostate problems. So does that mean that Prabhupada is not spiritual, that he cannot give me protection? Does it mean that Krishna is not spiritual? Does it mean that I'm not spiritual because I'm getting sick? Does it mean when I die that Krishna is not merciful? No. It's going to happen to each of us, to all of us. The question is, will we be sufficiently ready? Sunday, we should dedicate the feast to him, and devotees should have discussions. First, speaking about his qualities, his good qualities, and second, there should be discussions on what the impact was for them seeing him go through this transition up to final death. Seeing him go through this. See, the body is so amazing with all of its senses. And just as amazing as the body is, it's amazing how the body shuts down. It's amazing how we can do so many things with our senses in so-called our normal state. But it's just amazing how the body goes through this amazing unfoldment of shutting down so the soul can be able to leave. Just as someone, just as a butterfly, how the butterfly comes forth out of the cocoon. Yes. And so it's phenomenal. Or some of these the lotuses that we see now, how they are coming out of their bodies, out of one body, you know, into a body that flies around. They leave it and the form is there. You realize that life is just amazing. Right now we have life that's coming in, you know, into the community. And we have life that's leaving. We have life that's just recently come. And we have, you know, lives that's leaving. And there will be more coming, and there will be more going. Right now it's a big thing in America now. You know that previous President Ronald Reagan has died, and They were telling me in the car, Ray Charles just died. Last week we got a letter, one of our supporters from Washington, Dr. Chazelle, who just died in his sleep. And we've heard this in the last month or so, a few other deaths within the Vaishnava community. So every day in our communities as well as in the secular world, somebody is being born. Some entity that just previously at some point had left the body and now is appearing, taking birth. And everywhere, someone who had already taken birth for a while, whose time is due, now leaves. And that's what's kind of, really phenomenal. Is that we have many, many plans, and that's good. We have to try to maintain body and soul together and organize our lives, our institution, and our families. All of those plans work based on, again, a certain amount of effort, but a certain amount of karma that's connected with it. And regardless of those plans, there's a date when each of us will have to go. Now, there's some small play sometimes due to influence of sadhus, influence of guru, influence of the acharyas. Like sometimes people, out of their own kind of attachments, they hold a soul into the body just a little longer. Not so much, but a little longer than what would be normal. Because each person's consciousness is connected with another person's consciousness. They begin to understand that more, in quantum physics. How even something happening in another environment that seemingly is unrelated affects other environments. What to say of people and things that are in the same environment and are related, how they affect each other. Sometimes we see that people hold a soul into the body and keep that person, suffering. I saw that in the case of when my mother was leaving. She was fully ready to go, but she stayed in the body almost a whole extra year just because of so many members of the family who were very close to her, and she was very close to them. They could not see themselves living without her, since they were so dependent in some ways, healthy and unhealthy. But in the process, it kept her some extra time, suffering a little longer than what was necessary. And it was so delicate because we didn't want to impose on the family's desire. But at some point, we had to just let them know, look, release her, let her go. That everyone is going to have to leave at some point. And it is nothing so wonderful about living for a long time. What's important is quality life. Many people who, it's nice that devotees have had chance to, some of you, to study hospice care a little more and look a little closer at some of the practical applications, of transcending, leaving this body. You realize how important it is to help people to make a comfortable, loving transition where they're in an environment where they are cared for, and to be able to honor the fact that death is an amazing evolution, because it is a finalization that now one does not have to remain in that body that is full of suffering, pain, and where the mind doesn't have to be so much in anxiety about what it used to do, what it perhaps could be doing, what others are doing, and it is not able to do. Or the mind is not being so much in anxiety of seeing how the body is fully out of control. It's a very difficult thing for most, especially where one is used to being more independent, to be in a situation where you're totally dependent on others and where you have basically little, if at all, any control of what is going on with the body. And so it's like the experience of death is a way that the demigods help to remind us that all along we were dependent. We were having more of an illusion. We really had a lot of mastery and control of, you know, of our physicality, as well as, you know, as well as our mind. Because the mind goes through tremendous shifts. Even when we're sick, what to say when we're dying? We're just sick sometimes, not even chronic illness, even just some heavy sickness. And we see how the mind becomes extremely disturbed. We feel, why me? We feel angry at ourselves and at others, and even at God. Why do I have to have this wretched toothache that's just paining and paining? Why do I have to have these very heavy menstrual cramps? Why do I have to have this arthritis? Why me? What to say when there's something that we have that we're not going to be able to shake off? Whereas we think about the people who've had that, who we know who've passed, we must also think very deeply about ourselves. Who will be the next devotee that we all come to have bhajan, kirtan, and see that devotee's body gradually falling apart? It won't be long before it happens to every one of us. Of course, some cases we leave, you know, very abruptly, but through certain kinds of sicknesses, it won't be long before it happens to almost to many people who you know. And so, of course, what is amazing is how this happens. But each day we are captured by amazing illusion that somehow it's not such a reality. It's not something we really have to, organize our lives around that. If we take more attention to Prabhupada's books and his lectures, then we'll so much see how he has prepared us to leave this body. As we reflect on his own example, we see how he prepared us to leave this body. As it falls apart, we still find some way to do our best until that wonderful moment comes when we can step out of the body. Yes, it is important that we try all kinds of means to try to keep the body sound. Sometimes one thinks, and in over 90% of most deaths, people have a lot of incoherence because they're thinking, if I would have did this, then the person could have stayed longer. If I wouldn't have been there, this wouldn't have happened. If they hadn't walked across the street to go to the store, they wouldn't get hit by the car. No. There's a lot of ifs, but those things did take place. And those things was part of the unfoldment of that particular entity. We can say, well, maybe if we had arranged some other kind of therapy, some other kind of treatment, maybe if he had knew earlier, maybe if he had hemo earlier, all of these things, there are some possibilities, some slight alteration in time. But the Krishna factor is there. Because why does one person take allopathic treatment, they have cancer, and they never comes back. I have my older sister and her daughter who had cancer. They had treatment, and by Krishna's arrangement, you know, it has never come back. At the same time, my mother and father, you know, both died of cancer. Totally different situations. My mother, her mantra was, give me my flowers while I can see them. My mother's mantra was, I don't want anybody coming to my funeral crying, anybody coming in dark clothes. I want it to be a festival. So much so, she organized who would speak, what she would wear, what kind of casket she would have. Huh? She was very emphatic. No one should come to my victory ceremony and boo-hoo. And don't worry about bringing flowers. Bring me the flowers before I leave. And that was her mood. And so for her, she realized life is there and death is there, and therefore you must be ready when the time is. When she had one or two near-death experiences, the second time I met up with her, she says, I don't know why the Lord has kept me around this long. And so she was ready to accept that. In the case of my father, who lived much longer, he lived to be about 94 years old, was very healthy until maybe his last year, showed strong health, still driving his own car and fixing his own house, repairing things. But his mood was totally different. My father was quite a Scrooge, made significant money, but just stashed it away. So many banks and so many places in the house, and always kept a couple of $1,000s even in his wallet. And so he just had all of these things as if somehow he was going to live forever. He didn't spend hardly anything on us, practically zinch, and spend practically nothing on himself. My father wore the same suit for 55 years. He had a pair of shoes that he had for 40 years. Literally, he would not spend anything on anybody, not even himself. And the sad thing is that when he left, he had all this money in banks, in places that, you know, was not to be known because he wasn't paying, you know, sufficient taxes. And it was sad that he made us suffer so much, didn't give us anything, and he suffered himself so much, and he didn't even benefit, as if, you know, the money was going to be there so when he died he could take it all away and help with everyone. And so in one case there was a great readiness for death and a celebration of life and an acceptance that death was an honorable way to end one's activities and to be ready to try to, you know, meet up with God. In the other case, it was more of a mood of somehow this is mine and I'm not going to give it to anyone, and I'm not going to, you know, do anything for myself. Of course, before he left, he then made me the executor and arranged for me to dash it out to the different members of the family. But then that was, you know, some disputes and things and that. Anyway, but the point is how often we live and we keep making plans or we are having some kind of future orientation that minimizes being present and taking advantage of the best quality of associations, you know, that we can. How often do we do things with the idea that we can patch it up later? Or how often do we make plans that minimize that our real position, our real duty, is that we have to take care of our soul? When that body goes, I mean, when you saw the last few days, how the body was just there. First, you know, consciousness, and then after a while, less and less consciousness. and then in like coma, and then you see life force gone, and then there's just that body. See, sometimes some of us have not seen a dead body, a dead person. And it's very important that we see the dead corpse, the body. And I'm into my mother and father right now because I was just reflecting on them about cancer. My father had this interesting idiosyncratic tendency, is that on Sundays, after we leave church, about 75% of the time, he would somehow take us to funeral homes. He would take all the children with my mother to a funeral home, and he would walk all around the funeral home, looking at each casket, looking how people were dressed, and looking at the writing about who this person was. And I think sometimes we mention, you know, when the person passed or how the person passed. And later I realized, as I grew up, you know, became older, I realized, yeah, he was doing this because actually he had such a fear of death. And so his fear was so much connected with his lifestyle that he was holding on to money and to property as if that was going to keep him alive forever. And so to give it to anybody would be like giving part of his life. So he held on. You know, none of us can hardly remember any time that my father gave us anything. Just held on. And he was kind of a cheater. He told my mother, I'm not giving him anything because when they get ready to go to the university, I will take care of all of their education. And so it was like a hype, you know, you can just make that bluff from, you know, for 18 years. And so my sister and brother, you know, they either got pregnant or impregnated someone else and then didn't go to university. And then because I was the only one, when I was ready to go to the university, not only were we not arranged for my tuition, we're not even given money to buy a suit. We were on welfare. My mother had to go to her social worker to get money for a suit, so that I wouldn't be embarrassed, because I, at that point, I was in a prep school, the only black in the school, all these rich people, and she didn't want me to be embarrassed that I would have to go to graduation without a new suit. And so here she went to my father, with all due respects, and he would not even give small money for a suit, as he had promised for 20 years that he is saving money because he's going to give for our education. Now that was not an accident. Krishna reigns, I got a scholarship and other things were there. But it was also a way of looking closer at how people can live and try to hold on to things and they're going to lose them. When we dispersed his estate and his finances, my sister and brother almost out of resentment just spent the money almost as fast as they could. Just probably to make him angry. And it, you know, that you held him to all of this, and now we're going to take it, and we're just going to do whatever we want, and spend it, and spend it, and spend it. And just a few years, it was gone, just like that. So, when we hold on to stuff as if it's going to be around, we get the karma from it, and we miss the fact that we are born to die. It's like one day we gave a lecture how life, you know, is a school of love. That we are all being trained up in how ultimately to become, you know, very deep lovers, to go back to the spiritual world. But in that same reflection, we are being trained of how to put this body down one day and step right out of it. And in most cases, it's not always so smooth. There is some pain and some bewilderment. And part of that helps us to have more desire to want to get out. It's like some people, they would still want to hang around in it a lot longer if the devas didn't arrange for them to have more serious kind of complexities when it's their time. So it's like arranging so that they will be a catalyst so that this entity will be able to go out and they can reach this person and take them on to the next place. The body was so comfortable, no disturbances, no pain at all. We could do all the things that we always could do. Who would want to leave? Most people would still want to stay around in this terrible prison with the idea that they still can do things. Just see how the body sends that message. As we get older, the body starts saying, okay, it won't be long now. We are gradually shutting down. Memory shutting down. Problems, respiration, defecation, mobility. Then okay. But there are so many facilities to help minimize pain. And there are so many ways how Krishna can enter into the consciousness according to the karma of the person to help the person so that they are not having to experience protracted pain. But that is up to how the Lord is arranging for each person to live, to leave. So whether we leave is like His Holiness Sridhar Swami did in Mayapur Dham, in a bed, in the holy dham. There's so much association with devotees and darshan. Whether it's more abrupt, like Tamal Krishna Maharaj did, by the accident. Whether it's somewhat extended, as Srila Prabhupada, wrapping up his pastimes, and then seemingly that he's going to stay, then surprising us, is that we all will have that time when we have to go. If we are dying daily, wouldn't that be such a problem? That means in our mind, we are dying daily already, but if we're accepting in our mind that death is there and considering, okay, if I have to leave tomorrow or tonight, okay, it is okay. There's certain things I would like to have more time to do, but if I have to leave tomorrow or next week, it's all right. How many of us can say that? We have to look a little closer. What do we need to put in place so that we can be ready to leave next week if we have to? What do we have to put in place if we are finding ourselves experiencing serious chronic disease and now we're having some weeks or some months? Will our conscience become more intense and internalized? As we can look back in a sense of happiness of what we tried to do, what we did, or will we be looking back more, in a mood of frustration about what we didn't hold up to, what we didn't carry out, what we didn't complete? And last one or two other points, because again, speaking at death, after death, is only amazing if we haven't already been thinking about death and speaking about death. Since we're always to be thinking and speaking about death, that for us it should be, okay, now here's one of ours who now has come to that point. Just like somebody's going to school and they're up in the 12th grade and they're going to graduate. So when someone graduates, it's excitement. Mother Jagannath went to see her son graduate. It's exciting to see, oh, here's my son. He is graduating. But now if one has followed him to this point, you realize, oh, now, tomorrow, he'll be given the certificate because he's already been involved in the performance. And so let me go witness him and, take the certificate. It's not like such an overwhelming thing. Oh, my son, he graduated. I had no idea. But no, my son who did the necessary, now let me go there to honor his achievement. So when someone leaves, then we are there to honor their achievement as we wish them well and send our love and honor the fact of the time we had to be with them and hopefully what we learned from their association. I'm sure you had, you know, many different emotions, and that's natural. But a major emotion should be, as Prabhupada told Brahmananda. So you are going to also, you're going to experience this. He was letting him know. So you're feeling sad about me, as if what is happening to me is something out of the ordinary. But I am your spiritual master, and I'm showing you how to do everything. And so you are going to also have to walk your spiritual journey and give up the physical body and be ready to go on. So let us try to be more into dying daily, of looking and doing the best we can of whatever we're trying to do. But let us try so much more not to put so much energy and anxiety into temporary things. Everything is Krishna's energies, and we want to use them in a proper way. But how much anxiety we put into what somebody thinks about us, what someone said to us. So much anxiety into not liking this and not liking that. Do your best. Fix it. Make arrangements. Do whatever you can to improve whatever you can with your body, with your house, your facilities, with our community. But at the end of the day, realize every one of us are going to have to walk away from all of these things. And what we take is our consciousness. Be overwhelmed with your bills, overwhelmed with so many different things, but only to a certain extent. Because you're going to walk away from all of that at some point. Be very appreciative of your car, your clothes, whatever you get, whatever that you value, whatever it is, your house, whatever. But realize, your room, realize you're going to walk away from all of those things very soon. And if we, of course, not careful, then our next life, we have to involve ourselves in some of the similar kind of things to go on with our next unfoldment if we don't make, you know, massive leaps and bounds. So I just wanted to share, you know, those things with you. I wrote one or two, you know, short points down in the car. And I think as we remind ourselves that somebody is being born every day and somebody is also dying every day. What will be those experiences of the person who's taking birth? What will be the experiences of the person, you know, who's leaving the body? Life is a miracle. All medicine is ultimate failure, because at best, it just helps us to prepare ourselves for death. It can slow down a little bit the death process sometimes. But all medicine, all health modalities, naturopathic, homeopathic, acupuncture, acupressure, allopathic, all of them, what is guaranteed is that at some point they're going to lose their particular patient. And so we should be aware of that as we have our own treatments. We should know that these treatments may help to prolong the life, help the quality of life, hopefully, but they will not save our lives, because that is inevitable that we have to go. And of course, sometimes the way we realize that a little more is when someone dear to us, someone in the environment, does in fact leave, and we realize, this is what it looks like. this is what goes on. This is what I'm reading about. That when all the life airs are there, and when one makes that last gasp or grasp for breath, and the soul leaves, realize, okay, now I see that I'm really not the body, or that person really is not the body, because now the body is not moving. It's not able to communicate. It cannot do any other things that it was doing previously every day. It cannot carry out any other plans that was connected with that body anymore. Not only that, that particular body will not see you, and you will not see that particular body. But the soul is going on that way. So probably a major, message that I wanted to share was that, is that put sufficient conscious energy into so many things that we do in our day-to-day life, but keep reminding yourself it's secondary. You're bigger than that. You're bigger than your bills, your health problems, relationship problems, institutional problems, community problems. You're bigger than that, and all of that you're going to have to walk away from soon. So as that body was carried away, that we're all going to be carried away. Krishna, let me come back to be with you, to help you, because that body has already finalized its situation. And what has been necessary for that body and my part as guru was already done before I came here. But for us to be able to grow more from these experiences, to be able to be with you for a few hours, I leave tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock in the morning. To do what? Go see a doctor, and then to go to Siddhartha Yatra. This is my schedule. Tomorrow I leave very early. I go to New Jersey, see a dentist to try to fix up something here that didn't quite work from before. And then I go into Radhiyatra with Big Jaw from Novocaine, and I'll be dancing in Radhiyatra. I come back on Monday, I see another doctor about my tumors and foot swelling, and more I can't even hardly wear shoes now. And do I think, well, let me try this? But while I'm doing all of this stuff, I'm realizing, hey, I'm bigger than all of that. And one day, the whole body is just going to shut down. And so we do what we can while we have opportunity. We realize we're just slowing down, or we're just being given time. The question is, how much time do the devas give us to prepare, for the exit that we have to do ourselves? This is all that's happening. How much time are we getting for preparation before we have to exit? So some may need a little bit more, a little less. Krishna Loka wanted a little more, but Krishna was kind. His helpers, they intervene so he could go a little faster. He wanted to be around a little longer. I see some of you a little in denial that he was really going to go so soon. Maybe you thought it was going to be some spontaneous remission. We all have certain time, that we have to go. He was fortunate that he was living outside. Krishna arranged that for him, because of some level of sincerity, arranged for him to spend his last months, his last year, where he was fully in a devotional community. And so he didn't let him go back or go away. He wanted him to have that as adding to his karma and his spiritual credits. So he had a chance to take second initiation, a chance to do deity service, serving installed deities, which he had never done before. So he was given all of this while the body had already had a sentence, and that it had a chronic disease that was going to surface. So a lot of wonderful things happen, as we're devotees. And the karmi could also have been sick and it surfaced, but the difference is that of not what happens to the body, But ultimately what happens in the consciousness is that the Krishna variable is there, and one had an amazing chance to become more involved in Krishna conscious culture, or what is the real identity of the soul. And so we have to pray more and more that one will never leave the shelter in this lifetime with all the challenges we may have, and that when we do have to leave, that we can leave gloriously. In associations with the devotees, well wishes of the Vaishnavas. And we must also be ready that we don't want to linger on when it's really time. Want to be in readiness, okay? I'm ready to check out here. There are times when people put people on, you know, some type of life support system and just holding the body and some of the consciousness there. The person is, time is already up. So any questions or comments anybody have? Mm-hmm.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. The question is about death and fear. For me, there's a lot of fear around death because I question how and how. And where I will go. And for me, I know that, like, I don't have the confidence that I'll go higher. So there's a lot of fear, even when I'm chanting, or even in the temple room, I've had experiences sitting right here, and it was raining, and a thunderbolt came, and you know, Radha Damodar is right here, but I feel, you know, even though there's so much facility, I know I don't take advantage of it. And I know I'm not, my consciousness is not there, so what to do about that?
Well, there's no question of devotees who've done steady service about them not going higher. They will definitely go higher. Question is how high, and that has a lot to do with our desire. We know areas that we're weak in, and it's important that we try to strengthen ourselves in those areas. And even if we can expertly strengthen ourselves, but if we have very genuine desire, then Krishna accepts that desire. It is very rare that our quality is such that we can feel guaranteed that we're going to go back to the spiritual world. We are very much in need of the blessings of the sadhus, the blessings of the gurus. We're very much in need of that. And that accompanies our own devotion and quality. It doesn't replace it, it doesn't negate it, but you know, it comes along with our own quality. It's like you have a certain amount of finance and it's not enough what you want to buy, and so you have some friends or some mentor associates who assist you with a certain amount also of finance. But that finance they assist you with complements what you already have. And almost like in the secular world, people who already have something acquired, it's easier for them to get a loan or to get help once they already have something. Say, just take an hypothetical example. Some people, you know, are philanthropists or donors. They don't like so much giving money or donating when they see that people are not already trying or doing something, because they feel, why should I give all of my hard-earned money to this person who's not even, you know, trying to do something together or what they can do for themselves? But when they see that something has potential, serious investment is there, they feel, oh yes, this is a good area to, you know, to invest my money. Like sometimes, say an example, say you have the wealthy Indians who are trying to help, you know, build a project. So when they just hear the initial plans, they may not be so interested. But then they see that the project is already halfway established, and now the people just need additional more. They feel, oh yes, I'm not throwing my money into a bad situation. So when we try hard, I'm giving an example to show that when we try hard, we will get even more help. And we don't try hard, we definitely will not get the same kind of help. And because Srila Prabhupada is such a special agent in this world, and all of his sons and daughters and nieces, you know, granddaughters and grandsons, they're all under his umbrella, then he has responsibility for them, you know, in various ways. Other questions? Yes. See, it's almost like we are acting as monitors. Prabhupada is a principal, and we're like the teachers in the school system. The principal has set up certain standards and is overseen, is responsible for the functions of the school. And there are teachers that are there, and they do their part under the order and the structure of the principal.
I was noticing today in this situation, this is kind of a practical question, if you can just comment, that when the person leaves, like that seems like the services around in the environment, they kind of slow down. So if you can comment on the mood of separation and the service in separation. Because sometimes we hear in Nectar of Devotion, I heard this mentioned that priests, they shouldn't go on the altar certain number of days when this happens, and etc. But in the same time, can we just actually become even more engaged? Because the service and separation is a real connection to not only to a devotee, but...
Yeah, this is the power of the holy name, especially the power or the mercy of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, is that if we're just considering what constitutes being a proper sadhu and a proper brahmana, there's just so many things that we would have to be much more careful about doing them a specific way, according to the samskaras, according to the other Vedic conclusion. But we are to be Vaishnava Brahmanas. And so therefore, our first and foremost consideration is what is best in being able to serve Krishna, what is best in being able to glorify Krishna. Even if it means that we risk something in terms of our own physical well-being, and then we're covered. If service is the main consideration. There are so many rites and different structural things that's there, that's wonderfully a part of Vedic culture. And we shouldn't minimize or deny those. We should try to know and understand them, but at the same time realize that there are things that are essential that can be done if it brings on a higher bhakti, or if it's more directed, you know, towards service. It's like, here's an example, where normally one, you know, fasts, like in the Gaudiya Math, fasting, you know, doing the dry fast, the nirjara fast, was just a natural thing. Bodhisiddhanta was very clear with his followers that if this means that you're not going to preach or you're not going to do service, better to eat and go out and preach. And so the preaching and the service overrides personal austerity, etc. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't try to understand why such things are there. That in order to engage in the exception of the rule, it's important first to understand, you know, what is the rule, why the rule is there, and you know what the rule is. Yes.
As we get older, we notice that Krishna give us more wake-up calls. And each death is like a wake-up call, you know, that one day it'll be you. Are you ready? You know, I remember an old commercial used to come on television about driving safety. And say, guy be driving around, and then he'll run through the red light and say, and the announcer would say, 60 seconds saved, and what is he going to do with it? Mm-hmm. Then he go through a stop sign, another 60 seconds saved, and what is he going to do with it? And the same thing with death. Each time I have seen, I come here, I think we had over 100 and some cows, and I have seen about 75 of them leave the bodies, and each time it's a reminder. Death is there again, and what are you going to do with yours? And for a while, we get serious. We chant our rounds and engage and function, and then next thing you stray away from it, and then Krishna put you in an accident. Gee, I could have left my body. Now focusing, now chanting steadies, doing it, engaging, and then all of a sudden you fall asleep.
That's why we have, you know, personalities like Queen Kunti praying, you know, let these calamities happen if they can allow me to always to think of you. We had the fire here. How much did that put us into consciousness? You know, about trying to be more mindful about Radha Damodar when your neck of ear had to your accident. How much after the accident are you still trying to look at being more serious and focused, you know, in your life? Are you having the same kind of consciousness that you did, you know, a couple of days after the accident? You know, you have to ask yourself that. Krishna put you in an accident for a reason. That you come out of it for a reason. Didn't meet death. So now, how much did you change? How much did you become more serious in your chanting, in your service, in your reading, in your hearing? Each person, you know, has to ask themselves these kind of questions when they have their own experience, or when they have experience within the community. That is also their experience, because Krishna arranged that that's part of our encounter. Someone else's experience of death or accident, so-called accident. Okay, it's late, and some of you have been up, I think, quite a while last night. The devotees were calling me at 1 o'clock and then 4 or 5. So I know if you were calling me then, that means you didn't sleep, didn't sleep very much either. Any last question? Mm-hmm. Manasa? And that could be if you or whoever's going to drive me tomorrow, make sure they get proper rest.
I realize with everything that is going on that maybe it's foolish to think like that, but looking into myself, I see that in my life, seeing quite some debt close to me, I feel for myself that I'm not afraid of debt. But I'm very much afraid of suffering. I'm more afraid of living than dying, basically. And when I look at it, I see I don't know how to go along with that, since there's so much emphasis on being ready for that, and I feel even further away, since I'm not even just even ready for living in the proper consciousness. You know? So I don't know if you can maybe help me that.
Yeah, I mean, if we have certain fears, it's good that we are honest with those, but we can turn those over to Krishna also. Most people have some bias, are part of, you know, the Mahatattva. In most cases, we have fear of something, and we have reason to be fearful. It's like a young lady, you know, walking down the street, you know, can be fearful that somebody's going to rob you, somebody's going to rape you, someone's going to harass you. So we don't stop having those kinds of fears and think that it's something wrong if we have that kind of fear. We just have to do what is best to try to avoid complications or some problem, and then we still have to turn it over to Krishna, because you can just, you have an accident in the airplane, the car, or you can just, you know, you can just slide on a banana, fall down and just break your neck, be paralyzed, or fall down and die. And things like that have happened. Or someone has been very healthy, you know, have escaped many, you know, death-threatening circumstances and situations, and then they just have some really freak kind of accident, you know, that happens. They meet death. You think, well, hold a minute. Was that really an accident? No. Any more than the case of Aranyakasipu, who had thought that he had escaped death, and then the Sringadeva had a special way, you know, of how, you know, how to take him out of his body. So it doesn't mean, again, that we shouldn't do all that's necessary to keep ourselves healthy and to make plans and to deal with issues, but we should realize it is secondary. We have to walk away from it all at some point. When we walk away, will we be able to feel somewhat secure that, you know, we did our best? And most important, can we say that we held to our vows that we made, you know, to the Parampara? Can we say that our life touched the life of someone else? So important for one's own life to have value that somehow we're able to touch the life of someone else. If we lived mainly for ourselves, then that is not a deep service attitude, and moksha consciousness doesn't get us to Vrindavan. But selfless service of Krishna in the center, not just workaholic activities, not just foolish, you know, activities, not with passion, you know, like the monkey, but at the same time, one is to have his or herself fully agitated and focusing more on the primary things. So let us all, you know, use this first as we keep focused on Krishna Loka, at least for the next couple of days, as we send more attention and affection to his soul. We have a picture we could put at the feet of Prabhupada. It's the Antarmandi. If someone has, okay, we can put it at his feet. And then on Sunday, today is Friday, so on Sunday, if we can have the feast in his honor, and for the Sunday program, devotees could share some of their realizations in terms of, well, first to share some points about him that impressed you, some good qualities that he had. This is not just, you know, a mechanical ritual. But all of these things help in sending some solace, you know, to the soul. And then we also can share your own realizations of this experience in any way that you feel. I'm not, more than likely I won't be with you. I'll probably still be in New York or either in Washington. But I think it would be nice if we can share in that way. We have a picture of him on the Vyasa seat of Prabhupada up until Monday night. They put a garland on it also. So who will be the next person that leaves in our big society? Who will be the next person who leaves in our community? Radha Damodar knows, you know, and we will also know in the near future. ISKCON founder charge His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada ki Sri Sri Radha Damodar Vala Kala Chandi Goni Tadikana Baladev Subhadra ki Hare Krishna.